How do you measure the length of a year? Sometimes all you need is the right word. Welcome to Teacher Talk, where two teachers and a journalist step out of the classroom and into a pretty good conversation. I'm the journalist, Lori Walsh. In today's chat, Jackie Wilbur and Gina Benz look back on 2025 through the lens of the Education Week Word of the Year. Let's get started.
Well, our previous listeners might remember that we did do this last year in 2024. We talked about the word of the year, which was cell phone ban. And the part that I, for whatever reason, really hung on to was the fact that it was two words. And I'm still stuck on it for some reason. So, yes, I found that quite amusing that cell phone ban, two words, was the word of the year. But it was a trend last year because Oxford did that too, and they had brain rot as their word of the year. So two words then. And actually, this year, other dictionaries stuck with that two-word theme. So Oxford this year went with rage bait, two words, and then 6-7 from dictionary.com. And to be honest with you, I kind of thought that 6-7 was going to be the education word of the year, too. I've just been hearing a lot about 6-7, so I don't know if we want to spend some time talking about
we
it,
do.
But I have been wondering, Gina, did 6-7 make it to Roosevelt High School?
Yes, but just as I believe it was the Atlantic noted, we as teachers are pretty smart. We start using it, the kids will stop.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Intentionally, you start using it intentionally.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
because that's the whole point is that somebody would say it unintentionally, you know, from 6 to 7
that's true.
Hours or whatever, mm-hmm. minutes, 6-7 minutes from now, we're going to do this. And then guffaw.
Mm-hmm. Oh, mayhem.
Mayhem.
Yeah. If you want students to stop doing something, the adults should start doing it.
Okay.
Right? That's why students aren't on Facebook.
Sure. Right, because adults are.
Mm-hmm.
If memory serves me, that was also an episode of Abbott Elementary where there was the trend of desking, which was when they recorded themselves running around on the top of the desks while the teachers weren't looking. And posted that on social media, and then one of the teachers did it, like the ultimate desking challenge, and then it was over.
What's going on?
Weird.
I know what's going on, and it's bad. In fact, I've been praying that it wouldn't breach our walls.
Ghosts.
It's called desking. It's a new online challenge where kids jump from desktop to desktop. Heard about it last week through the custodial network. These videos are everywhere. Mr. Ronson over at West Adams Elementary said he's been cleaning desks for weeks.
That's exactly right.
The teacher did it, so.
Yes, it's in the middle of season one, and it's Jacob. I know this exactly.
It's
like
Jacob,
I think it's episode 8 or 9, Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And they must have someone in the writing room who's in education.
I don't know.
They're so spot on. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When they need to be guests on Teacher Talk. Let's find out
how
they're getting their ideas.
Okay,
dream guest. Yes. That would be so fun.
We were mentioned on the Colbert Show, and now
we think
that Abbott Elementary Writing Room folks should come talk to us.
Yes.
Amazing.
Jackie, how did you find out we were mentioned on the Colbert Show? Because you're the one who let Lori and me know.
Yeah.
My aunt contacted me.
Had she been watching it?
Yes, she had. My aunt was watching Colbert and also listens to Teacher Talk and messaged me.
South Dakota Public Radio has Teacher Talk, podcast about teachers talking about their jobs and giving advice to fellow educators. I love Vermont Public Radio.
It was great.
That's
great. I woke up to that message that morning. And then over the new year, multiple people said, oh, my gosh, I saw that you were mentioned on Colbert. So, yeah, that was highlight.
It really
very,
is.
Very cool.
For anyone who doesn't know what rage bait is, the Oxford word of the year, how would you describe that, Jackie?
I didn't do as deep of a dive in this, so this is not I'm not as familiar, but my light understanding is that anything that causes you to feel anger, and then you'll click on the link to read more to continue your anger. So the bait being, you know, this is a clickable link, but I'm intrigued by it because it makes me angry.
Yeah. Ooh, that's not how I understand it.
I understand it.
I bet there's multiple meanings. When the teenagers I work with use it, it means that they are baiting someone to get into a rage, right? So like if my son knows there's something that really annoys me, then he does the thing that annoys me.
Oh.
That's rage baiting.
Okay.
Wow.
So
I love that.
Same thing, only online versus in person.
It would be in person when I hear teenagers talk about it.
I love that. This is so...
Is that worse? That feels worse to me, but maybe it's not worse.
They're doing it in a teasing way.
I'm not touching you.
Yeah.
I'm
yes.
not touching you. That kind of
right
thing all grown up.
Yeah. And the spirit of it is teasing, which can hurt. Teasing can be bad, but it's not the worst thing.
Okay.
In but this, it's with in the intention context, of getting you to be upset.
Yep.
Right? Like
get
that's it. Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I also love, I feel like this happened to me all the time when I was teaching middle school, where I would have an understanding of a word, just like we experienced here. I would be like, I know what that word means. And then a middle schooler would use it, and I would say, I don't actually know what that word means the way you're using it now. So,
see, yeah, it's I like true. The nuance I would have said clickbait for online stuff.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Where it's like, yeah, the headline is so tempting. Like, we know you're going to click on this based on... whatever. Our example around here is always John Thune with kittens. You know, like, you know, if you want to get all the clicks on your show, well, we would just put John Thune in an interview and give him a bunch of cats. And yeah, we know everybody would click on that.
Yeah, because they're interested in both topics.
Doesn't mean we're going to do it. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, because you'd be curious about that.
Except now, Senator Thune, call us because.
Yes.
Let's do
we
it.
We can get the kittens in the room.
All Amazing. Right. So let's talk about what the word is.
Yes. So much buildup, right? I haven't said yet.
So much buildup for the 2025 Education Award of the Year.
Yes. Is dismantle.
Dismantle.
Womp, womp, womp.
Yes. Dismantle. Every teacher's heart just dropped into their shoes.
Definitely not as fun as 6-7, not as lighthearted, for sure.
And worse yet, I'm such an optimist. I was like, well, maybe dismantle can be a good thing. And then you have the dictionary definition, which is...
Yes. Yeah, to disconnect the pieces of, to destroy the integrity or functioning of. That's the Merriam-Webster definition.
To destroy the integrity or function of. Ouch.
Yes.
Okay.
But, you know, Education Week did do what you're doing, Lori, which is to say dismantling isn't always bad. There's a reimagining, a rebuilding, a reshaping that comes with dismantling, right? And so I think we can look at this from a lot of different angles. But certainly in 2025, there was at least disconnection of the pieces of the ways education had functioned before from the federal level on down. There's been a lot of restructuring.
Let's go over some of the highlights, the news headlines. In its 46-year history, the Department of Education has been attacked before, but this is the first significant structural change to the U.S. Department of Education in that 46 years. Jackie, just tick off some of the things from your piece that that were the headlines in education in 2025.
Well, I think the broad scope was the intent to dismantle the U.S. Department of Education. That was a campaign promise. And so while the department can't be eliminated without an act of Congress, there was certainly major steps that were taken to restructure and dismantle or reallocate parts of it. Specifically when it came to grant funding, $20 billion of K-12 grant funding was reallocated to different federal agencies outside of the U.S. Department of Education. There was also substantial staff reductions. Approximately half of the workforce at the U.S. Department of Education was let go. Long-standing grant programs were canceled that impacted teacher training, school mental health, STEM research, things of that nature. And then federal contracts and pilot programs were revoked. Some of this has since been restored, but within 2025, those first steps were taken.
So what is in doubt? What do we not know and what do we kind of know is permanent? What might be ahead? The picture is kind of murky, Jackie.
I agree, and I hesitate to make any strong predictions because I certainly wouldn't pretend to have any insider information. I applied for, and along with the team that I work with, for a federal grant that we were awarded in 2024, and there certainly was uncertainty during this past year, during the government shutdown and during those staff reductions, and I think that that uncertainty continues into 2026. I think some points of clarity have been made now that those layoffs seem to be permanent and new people have been appointed to different tasks, but I also think given the large amount of executive orders that happened in 2025. I think there's just a question of what additional executive orders will be coming in 2026.
Right. Also, we don't know what the funding is going to be because there are two separate bills, one in the House, one in the Senate. Could be headed for another government shutdown if they can't reconcile this. So how are school districts making decisions then?
I think it's been challenging. And again, yeah. I'm not a principal, I'm not a superintendent, and so I wouldn't pretend to be in their shoes. But from talking with folks, I think you have to move forward with the plan that the funding will not be there so that you're not making plans, right, that then you can't follow through with. And so or making shorter-term plans as opposed to longer-term plans until more information is available.
We also know in the state of South Dakota, Governor Larry Roden's budget proposal had zero increase for school districts as well. So that's flat as far as we know. So we'll see what legislators have to say. Well, there are a lot of stressors, concerns, confusion, a little bit of chaos. But you say in the column, teachers are pretty effective at creating clarity in times of chaos. This is what we do.
Yes, this is not the first time as an educator I felt uncertainty. You know, there's always in society moments of uncertainty at various levels. And students have always asked when I've been in roles from middle school, high school, and now at the collegiate level about that uncertainty. What's happening with this situation, right? And it's difficult because we don't know the answer, you know, mm-hmm. about countless things, you know. That being said, it has always felt, at least to me, important to create a sense of safety and stability. I'm the adult in the room. And I think all educators are really adept at doing that. I remember as a young person when we were potentially going to war or potentially there was a conflict in various places, my first, second, third grade teachers talking with us about those kinds of things, right? And providing a sense of adults being at the helm. I just think that educators do that pretty naturally. That being said, it's not always easy to be the one that young people are looking to during times of uncertainty when you yourself as the adult don't really have a lot of answers.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. And emotional regulation, is that what you called it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Just the yes. ability for teachers to regulate their emotions, not stuff them down, but regulate them in the appropriate way in the classroom because you are the adults. And you were not the teenagers in the classroom, Gina.
That's right. That's right.
I want to ask you, Gina, if you have students in the Teacher Pathway Program mm-hmm. who might be thinking about a career in education, and they come to you and they say, there's been so much confusion. I'm not sure. Should I even go into this field? It seems pretty dicey right now. How would you hold on to that for that student and help them understand what this career might be like?
I have to acknowledge that it is hard when we hear these things in the news and media. What makes our hearts drop is that you feel devalued. You mm-hmm. feel like people in the public think you're doing a terrible job. And you're working so hard. You know, things are so complicated and the sound bites are so simple. So I was looking at a comment to a Facebook post last weekend from one of our state legislators. And, you know, he said, our public schools have very low scores on our state assessments. And that's true. But it's such a nuanced and complicated discussion. It's not just that. For instance, what I want to say is we're making an assumption that the students are trying on these exams. Mm. The students have no reason to try. This is a low-stakes event for students. High stakes for schools and school districts, low stakes for students. It means nothing for them. And the same students who score so low on state assessments are scoring great on other assessments.
Sure.
But it's not the assessment being reported to our legislators. I have watched students click through an exam that should take 90 minutes in 15. And there's nothing we can do about it because when we're giving a standardized exam, you can't interfere with that. Mm-hmm. And I have a colleague who has watched students who speak other languages cry through the exam because it doesn't matter what language you speak. You have to take this exam in English. And we have students who have an IQ that would put them at age 3 or 4 take the exam. And that all figures into the average. And so the dismantling that so many people are pushing for does feel like an indictment against teachers. And I needed to share that part of the story.
Yeah.
So you asked about teacher pathways students, though. They hear that. They hear these things. And I remind them that being a teacher is a very stable career. It really is. People will say, well, what about AI? We learned during COVID that students don't learn best through computer screens. They can, and some do great. But by and large, that human connection is so important. It's a stable career you can find in almost any town. And especially in the public school system, you can lead a very solid middle-class lifestyle with a good retirement, good health insurance. And so I remind them of all those things. And then the biggest is that one of the greatest blessings of being a teacher is you get to meet so many different people from a true cross-section of society. And it's those connections that make such a difference. And then you get to give people more options and opportunities in their lives.
I have been amazed by the students who are education majors that I get to work with and just how helpful they have actually been and how they feel called to this profession because they want to be the ones who are helping, you know. Mm-hmm. And it always makes me think of the Fred Rogers quote, but that in a time of a crisis, and I'm not necessarily saying that's what we're in right now, but it's certainly a period of uncertainty, but to look for the people who are helping. And I do think that people who are called into this profession really have a deep sense that they would like to be there for the next generation and to support young people as they grow up. And so I think what I'd like to say to the educators out there and those who have educators in their lives and those who are thinking about becoming educators is that that is deeply valuable to have that sense of purpose and clarity about who you'd like to be in society and how you want to be contributing to it. And I do feel like this is a field that does that kind of no matter what is going on in the rest of the world. You know, you really are still there helping them learn to read and helping them learn how to do math and helping them learn to tie their shoes potentially, depending on what grades you have. And you're there for them as they grow up.
Yeah. I had a conversation. We took podcasting equipment into a local public school.
Yes.
And I was talking to one of the teachers there, and she said one of her lessons was, you know, about screens and screen usage. And we were going over the nuances of that. And she said, sometimes if, you know, you're not supposed to have screens however many hours before you go to bed. And some of the students would just look at the teacher and say, what else are we supposed to do? Like they didn't know that. And so to your point that in any time, in any generation, teachers are helping their students figure out how the world works. You're teaching them how to read and you're teaching them that if they have to put their phone or their device away a certain period of time before bed, they might set their clothes out for the morning. They might play with some toys. They might ask a grown-up to read to them. They might look at the book themselves. This teacher had a list of those things that very patiently she would teach the students of how to handle that time without their devices. It's always going to be something that the teachers are going to be teaching along with how to read, how to do the math, how to figure out the parts of a flower.
Mm-hmm. And I would say that teaching is one of the most patriotic professions.
Mm. Say more about that.
We are helping young people grow and develop and think critically and have knowledge and understanding that supports a democracy. Thomas Jefferson was the first to establish the idea of a free public education because democracy depends on educated people. And so, yes, teachers are doing a lot more than reading, writing, and arithmetic. It's critical thinking, looking at multiple perspectives, understanding bias, all these things.
Yeah. Another question I asked in that visit to the school was, what do you think AI should not be able to do? What do you think robots, I think the question was, should not be able to do? And one of the students, the first thing she said was, teach. They should not be able to teach. I'm like, what if they're really good at it? She's like, no, they shouldn't be able to teach. And then she had a list of reasons why. Just it all surrounded on her current teacher and how she felt that teacher did things that she knew could not be replicated by any kind of machine.
Yeah, because how often do I adjust my teaching of one student, the whole class, a small group, because I see the look in their eyes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I see their shoulders go up or go down.
Hmm.
So much research continues to say that the most important part of student learning is their teacher. And so, I think that's supported. And the one thing AI can't do is be a human, right? And so we need human interaction in order to work with young people and help them develop. Yeah. I feel compelled to add that I don't want to come across that I feel like we're beyond reproach or that there's no criticism to ever be levied towards the education system. I have my own criticisms of education at various points. I've had my own criticisms of educators. But I think that the challenge that this word in particular brings up is that the idea that it all needs to be dismantled. And I think that misses what we've been talking about on Teacher Talk, right?
Yeah.
And so, as always, I really shy away from all or nothing kind of thinking. And so I don't mean to pretend to say that there's nothing that needs to be reevaluated. And at the same time, I don't think it all needs to be dismantled.
Yeah, I'm glad you added that, Jackie. Yeah. That is an important thing to say. And I got to thinking about curriculum. And schools all the time are dismantling their curriculum, and then it goes to the rebuilding, re-examining what we should do for this new generation
Right.
It has to be dismantled.
Or new research where we learned something that we didn't know before.
Yes.
Let's pick a better word. What's the word?
Yes.
Now, again, it's a word for 2025. It's the word for the year that was. It's not a declaration of what 2026 will be in this case. Is there another word that when we think back about a year of Teacher Talk because certainly we did not spend most of our time talking about dismantling.
No, I felt like the cell phone ban much more matched up with our conversations in 2024. And then honestly, we continued it into 2025. Education Week looks back on the news articles that they published, the letters that are written in as opinion, and then also what were the most read articles from their news cycle. And that's how they selected the word. So, and that was the term that was used by this administration to discuss education a lot this year. That was the term of art. So
that makes sense.
It makes sense to me that they chose it. But yes, when I was so excited to write about this topic, and then I looked up the word of the year and I was a little less enthusiastic than I had been before looking it up. So
Gina, so much of, to Jackie's point, so much of what we talked about last year, 2025, was about how those cell phone bans were working. And that was a really positive conversation. Was there a word that you think of when you're in your classroom and the students are not using their phones and you look around and you're like, oh yeah, this is a positive thing. Is there a word that describes that?
The first word that came to mind was peace.
Mm-hmm.
The second word is thoughtfulness.
Mm.
And the third word is I'm going to do two words, Jackie.
I love it.
The third is productive struggle.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The 2025
word of the year is productive struggle.
I'll do it.
I love it.
Thank you guys so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Lori.
Love this.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
SDPB's Teacher Talk is a podcast for teachers and their BFAWs. That's your best friend at work. And it is made by education professionals who love their jobs. Dr. Jackie Wilbur is a faculty member and director of the Center for Student and Professional Services at the University of South Dakota School of Education. She has been a middle school, high school teacher, and a public librarian. She is also an experienced registered yoga teacher. Gina Benz has been teaching for more than 25 years. She is a recipient of the prestigious Milken Educator Award. She teaches at Roosevelt High School in Sioux Falls. She is also an adjunct professor at several state universities. And that's our conversation. We hope that it served you. You can download, like, share the Teacher Talk podcast wherever you get your podcasts. That helps us find even more listeners in the podcasting space. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.